With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan Newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
And if you have his subscription newsletter, he writes what you read as well. Or if you also enjoy Sports Illustrated and Baseball America, you can enjoy the work of baseball analyst Joe Sheehan, who is on Twitter at @Joe_Sheehan and who joins us on the Al Pamati Ford hotline. Al Pamati Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Joe, hello.
Hey, what's going on, Dan?
Well, what's going on here is the matchup last night between Jake Arrieta and Yu Darvish and a controversial call on a check swing by Andrew McCutchen and Joe Maddon calling for technology to allow us to objectively figure out what a swing is. And I think we've come to the conclusion that trying to do that would lead to all kinds of unintended consequences that would make for a complete mess.
Well, you'd have seven-hour baseball games.
We already do.
I mean, you're just not. I'm a big believer in replay. I think that it's been implemented badly in baseball, and there's always been a pretty obvious solution: a fifth umpire in the booth creates umpire jobs, takes the job away from the guys on the field. I've never understood why they haven't implemented it that way. I think there's an idea that the guys on the field have to, because the whole principle is, well, you have to. Call on the field is the guiding principle, and the guiding principle should be what actually happened. But to get back to what Madden's saying here, you're never going to be able to get to a straight answer on a check swing. It's a judgment call in the moment. Personally, I feel like 99% of replays make it look like the batter swings. I've always kind of followed that, but I don't think this is an area where replay is actually going to help.
Looking through that game last night, Yu Darvish, who we talked about for, well, let's be honest, for weeks now, has had one of his better starts as a Cub. That's a couple in a row that didn't look so terrible. Are you starting to believe in turnaround as potential for him? I know you've been a little higher on Yu Darvish than most, at least for the bulk of a season.
Even when Yu Darvish pitches well, it's a hard watch.
Yeah,
I think last night was in that same category. This is just who he's going to be now. He's going to be this guy who's going to still strike out 12, 13% of the batters he faces. It's going to be a lot of deep counts. You know, how do the 3-2 pitches fall in a given night? And last night he was able to get some strikeouts, kind of avoid some of the walks. That's two starts in a row now, which he's walked fewer than four batters, which, I mean, that's a really low bar, but he's clearing it. I still think you're looking at him as a three. And a three with pretty high variance. He's going to have nights. He's going to have innings where he looks like the Yu Darvish of 2011. But I just don't think the command, particularly the secondaries, is ever coming back to allow him to be the number one, number two that he was in his heyday with the Rangers.
Another blown save for the Cubs. It puts them on an ignominious list of teams that have given away some games late. It's something you can fix. Theo Epstein has said, because of the new, earlier, hard deadline, that we're already getting to the point where some of these deals are going to start to be made. I saw Anthony Swarzak was on the move just yesterday, and Theo even mentioned the teams might be shoring up some of their AAA crops of players for guys later on who might help a roster as we get into the dog days. What do you foresee in the immediate future on the horizon for the trade market generally?
I keep waiting for Farhan Zaidi to make a move. He's had that job now for 8 months. Madison Bumgarner's still a Giant. Will Smith is still a Giant. But, they've fallen into last in the West. They were never expected to contend, but, you kind of always – teams always need to see it from themselves, right? It's hard when you've had the decade that the Giants have had to go into a season thinking you're going to be a seller. But, with – was about 10 weeks to the trade deadline now. You look at Will Smith as an impending free agent. You look at Mark Melanson with a year and a half to go on that deal. They've built some good younger relievers they can go with in Trevor Gods and Reyes Barata, so they can trade veterans like Smith, Dyson, Nick Watson, and still have an effective bullpen. So I think they're going to run the trade deadline, especially with the emphasis on relievers. What are we, 5 years into this era? You go back really to the 2015 Royals, right, where a team just kind of basically went to the postseason and said, we're just going to ride our bullpen forever. I think that that's where teams now say, hey, look, we just want to get to July and then figure out what our bullpen's going to look like. You know, Theo makes a good point here. Teams aren't going to be able to wait until the middle of August anymore. So maybe the Swarzak deal is an early effect of the elimination of the August trade deadline, where teams are going to have to act earlier and earlier, even on minor pickups like an Anthony Swarzak.
Talking baseball with Joe Sheehan, as we do every Tuesday at 10. He is at @Joe_Sheehan on Twitter, Sports Illustrated, Baseball America, all the smart places where baseball's written. It's the Bernstein McKnight Show. Joe, do you think that when the MLB draft ends on the 5th of June, and we get like the next day Craig Kimbrell sign and Dallas Keuchel sign, that the union will make as big a stink about those signings because teams won't have to give up draft picks as they've made about guys like Chris Bryant or potential prospects coming up like right after their 12 days of service time elapse and they get the extra year of control?
They're still a union?
Wow.
Wow, you hear these things. You hear these rumors. I thought they disbanded. I'm surprised. A sternly worded press release from Tony Clark's office. Well, that's sure gonna change things. Look, the MLBPA has let itself get run over for about a decade now, and the next chance they're going to have to show themselves to be a union in the spirit of Marvin Miller, in the spirit of Don Fehr, is going to be the 2020-21 negotiations. All of these interim possible solutions are just posturing. You make your bones as a union at the CBA. So whatever they do, whatever, like I said, sternly worded press release comes out after Kimbrel and Keuchel sign, you know, you guys had the chance to do this in 2016. You guys have steadily given away the value of players on the market by allowing a soft cap in the luxury tax, by allowing basically letting teams be penalized for signing free agents. Mm. So call me in 2020, 21, you know, when the negotiations start, when you guys sit and say, we're going to reverse these trends. What happens in the middle of June doesn't tell me anything about the union.
You wrote about the disappearing triple. What's happening?
It's a combination of factors. The biggest one being the fact that there's taking any 90 feet on a baseball field is less valuable than it was 20, 30, 50, 100 years ago because of disappearing single. When strikeout rates are above 23-24%, and when singles are harder than ever to come by, the value of going from second to third doesn't matter as much. So it's just a risk management thing as much as anything else. I was thinking about that watching Descalzo go second to third last night. Yep. on the triple, Herrera and McCutcheon doing their little Alfonso Gaston act out in left center. But there's it's some of that. Some of it's ballparks. I mean, ballparks are just smaller than they were, you know, two or three generations ago. Outfielders are better, so it's a lot of little things coming into it. But really, it's mostly just going second to third isn't worth the risk anymore when the next guy isn't likely to hit a single and is likely to hit a strikeout or a pop up that isn't going to move you up anyway.
I also wondered about scouting for speed, where in the 70s and the big carpeted ballparks, the cookie cutter parks, and you had the typical, you know, pigeon-toed Cardinals outfielder, and everybody ran the 60, and that was the most important thing, that now speed just doesn't matter as much. It's great to have it. You'd rather have it than not, but it's not necessarily a deal-breaker if somebody can still bash a baseball.
Right. And in addition to the dimensions, of course, the disappearance of turf. There's certainly no turf like there was in, you know, we grew up where they basically just laid a green carpet on a bank of concrete and you're basically playing like you did. I grew up playing on concrete and asphalt here in the city. And that was kind of baseball you were playing. That there was a 20-year period where that was the style of play. And yeah, you're right. Speed was a much different, much bigger part of the game then. I think teams still want to see speed because it's part of an athleticism package. Players who are good and have speed tend to age better than players who are good and don't have speed. Speed-only players, your Tom Goodwins, your Curtis Goodwin, I guess, too, your Corey Pattersons, those guys will wash out quickly. But players who are fast and do other things age better. So speed is still important, but it, applied speed as you know, comes to steals and extra bases and playing the outfield isn't as important as it used to be.
Maybe forcing you into a choice on Lucas Giolito's season isn't the best way around it, but is it better to look at Lucas's year as prospect who's finally making good or guy who had to remake everything about himself?
Can I split the difference?
Yeah, you can.
You kind of baked it into the question there, I know, but we talk about a guy who's really finding command within the zone. I mean, some of the numbers are a little, I mean, the three homers is not going to sustain, but that huge drop in the walk rate is real. And again, I think we have talked about this before. We expect guys to come to the majors now and dominate. You know, Walker Buehler and Jack Flaherty last year. But it's more likely that a pitcher is going to go through what Giolito's gone through, both with the injuries and then, you know, having the consolidation year last year where he made 32 starts. They weren't very good, but stayed in the rotation, made 32 starts. I think this is a step forward. I think who he is probably – I think he takes some of that upside off. I'm not sure we can project a Gio to be a number one, even a high number two. But, you know, if he's a 2-3 for the next few years, if he turns into – oh, I'm trying to make a decent comp here. I'm sorry, guys. I'm blanking on might be a good comp here, but somebody who provides you those 32 starts as an ERA about 3.5 in that park, it's going to be maybe 3.6, 3.7. But he gives you the innings, he gives you the starts. But you always are going to want to try to find somebody, whether in the market or through development, who's going to be your true number one, whether that's Kopech or going out this winter and signing Gerrit Cole or somebody. Giolito, I think, is a 2 on a good team, not a 1.
I'm looking at the slash line of Cody Bellinger at 405, 485, 791 with a WRC plus of 233. Per Fangraphs, he is worth 4.2 wins above replacement already here on May 21st. Was this a sample size that is raising eyebrows at this point? Hot start is one thing, but it's already been 194 plate appearances of this, Joe.
And there's a skill change as well. He's gotten much better at getting the bat to the ball. The strikeout rate, excuse me, guys, has dropped considerably. Briefly, he had more walks than strikeouts. He doesn't at this point, but he was in that range now. The power's always been there. But there's always been the question of, you know, was he going to get the bat the ball enough to, is he going to be a 270 hitter or a 330 hitter? And Bellinger, nobody's a 405 hitter. You know, Tony Gwynn retired a long time ago. He passed away. But does this mean that Bellinger might actually be a 300, 310 hitter with all of the power that he brings to the game and with being a good defensive first baseman? Yeah, I think that's who he's going to end up being now. And again, you know, he's just 23. We don't talk about it as much anymore because aging curves have changed over the last 25 years, but we used to talk about guys coming to the majors young and the big step they could take at age 23. And you go through history, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, you see a lot of these guys have these big steps forward at 23. I want to say Griffey Jr. had his first big year at 23 and other guys. Bellinger's taking that step forward this year. But, I mean, yeah, nobody's a 1,200 OPS hitter. But is Clay Bellinger's improvement for real? Absolutely.
Joe, as always, we appreciate it. Look forward to talking with you again next week.
Thanks, fellas. Take care.
That is Joe Sheehan, our regular baseball expert.
Taking digs at the union on the way out.
Always does. That's consistent.
Well deserved.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.